Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with a great guest, Joe Giordano, who's the author of Birds of Passage, Stories and Places I Remember, and several other books. So welcome, Joe. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Bob.
No, it's my pleasure. So you're an Italian boy from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I'm an Italian boy from Queens. So let's talk a little bit about your upbringing, and you know, we'll compare notes a little bit.
Sure. Well, I think I grew up in a typical lower middle class neighborhood. By the way, I also lived in Queens in Ozone Park. My grandparents were immigrants. My father was an immigrant. They worked. They went through the Depression, and that of course marked them, as it did many people of that generation. And they had little chance for education, so they had a tremendous respect for me getting an education. I remember my father and I, if we ever passed someone on the street doing manual labor, he'd say, "You see that? Go to school." I took his advice. When I say typical of a young boy growing up in the 50s, you lived in a smallish house. You didn't have the internet, as you know. You didn't have video games. We had 7 channels on TV, I'm sure you remember.
Right, yeah.
And so you went out. You went out to play, and you and the other neighborhood kids would figure out what would be the game that entertained you at that moment.
So what section of Brooklyn did you live in?
Well, I was born in East New York, and then my family moved to Queens. We lived in Ozone Park.
I lived in Ozone Park when did I live there? 75, 76. I lived there for a little while.
Had an apartment. We left. I left a little bit before that to go to school. Actually, right around that time, I was at City College of New York, and then I went to Cornell and Ithaca around that time. You came in. We're in Ozone Park, were you?
I can't remember the exact street, but I wasn't.
Remember John Adams High School?
I know of it, yeah. But yeah, I lived not too far from the Cross Bay Theater.
Yeah, you know, okay. That so that yeah. was Cross Bay Theater was, as I recall,
it was Woodhaven and something.
Yeah, it was on Woodhaven Boulevard, and 24 cents on a Saturday, get a double feature, 10 cent bag of popcorn.
Yeah, 10 cent bag of popcorn.
Times have changed.
Oh, yeah, a little bit. We were remarking, my wife and I were remarking on the size of the of ring things now. Remember, they used to be like this big, and now they're like this big.
Yeah, well.
and a lot more money.
They're going to get smaller with the inflation we're getting.
I'm sure they will. And your story reminds me a little bit of somebody that grew up in the same town as me, College Point. However, I didn't know him at the time. He's a little bit older than me. But he, his whole family, they all became doctors. And he said his father, at least middle class. He was a jeweler, I believe. But he painted on the ceiling a stethoscope, I think, and a medical book, and told his kids, "You're going to be doctors."
Yeah.
And every night when they went to bed, they saw this on the ceiling. Imagine.
Well, when I was accepted at City College, City College sent a card, a postcard to my house, and where you were supposed to pick your major, liberal arts or engineering. And my father, who thought liberal arts was basket weaving, said, "You're going to be an engineer." He ticked off the box engineer, sent it in. And I became an engineer.
Well, he was right. He was right.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Well, I listened to him. He was an intelligent man, well-read, self-taught, started his own business. But again, you know, he grew up in a much more difficult time than I did, and had a more tempestuous life than I did.
But you know, Joe, they were all intelligent men and women. You know, I had my mom's family were nine. You know, there were nine brothers and sisters, and you know, they were all like an extra father. You know,
yeah.
And you know, if you got it out of line, you got the little rap. You know.
Oh yeah, no, you knew where the limits were.
Exactly. not like today for sure. You know, my dad. You've seen his pictures. My dad was a photographer for the Daily News from the late 40s through the early 80s. And he worked in Brooklyn and Queens. That was his beat. So, you know, it's quite likely, you know, you saw some of his photos growing up. And you know, one thing that was interesting that people forget nowadays who didn't grow up in the era we grew up in the Father Devlin, when he talked about my dad at his funeral, said we saw New York through the eyes of these men. You know, that's how we learned about New York, what was going on in the city. It was through the Daily News, the Post, the Mirror, those papers, you know.
Oh, absolutely. My father would send me every Sunday to the candy store, which we had at that time, to get the papers. As I recall, was the New York Times a quarter? And I think the Daily News was a nickel, but maybe on Sunday the Times was a quarter.
Yeah, I think the news was the cheapest I remember. The news was a nickel, and I think Sundays may have been 10 or 15 cents. And you're right, yeah. I think the Times Times was a little bit more back those. But then again, you know, the Subway was 15 cents. So,
well, that was the Subway, 15 cents. You used to say that and 15 cents will get you on the Subway. That was an expression.
So, all right. So your career was an engineer. What got you started writing, you know, your short stories and books?
Well, actually, I was an engineer by education, but then as a young man, and actually I was in the PhD program at City College, and I realized that what I was becoming was an applied mathematician. Rather than an engineer. And I said, well, I wanted something more people-oriented. Just coincidentally, my father was also, his business was photography. He took baby pictures and dance pictures and so on. I had some interest in business. I worked for him, in summers and, you know, when I could. And at that time, the MBA was a big thing. It was just getting started. So I went to Cornell for an MBA. And actually, I had a business career mostly with 3M. And with 3M as a global company, we had the opportunity to travel around the world. We lived in Greece and Brazil and Belgium and Netherlands. And when we were in Greece, you get a different perspective outside the United States. Mm-hmm. And I developed, you know, looking at the history of that region. I had Greece and the Middle East. So I traveled into Egypt and other Arab countries, Turkey and so on. And I developed a perspective on, you know, how insignificant we are in the whole light of history. Developed an interest in history, in Greek history, and decided I wanted to write a book about the Persian Wars, you know, Marathon and Thermopylae and Salamis. And that was in my mind for many, many years, but I actually didn't tackle it until I retired from 3M. And I wrote a fictionalized history of that time. And to be honest with you, the prose was just terrible. I mean, having written 1 million emails in business did not qualify me to be a fiction writer. So I enrolled in the University of Texas. I took a great writing course with Ben Fountain, who wrote Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. And he inspired me to write short stories. And so I started to write short stories, and then finally got published. We're almost at the anniversary of the first short story I had published 10 years ago. I continued to write stories and finally got the confidence that I could tackle another novel. And that's how, actually, I wrote a I took a course in the progressive era in our country, which is the time. I took it because it was the time that my grandparents, my father, emigrated to the country. And I wanted to understand what kind of environment they faced when they entered. My term paper was on Italian immigration. That led me to a short story, and eventually it became the research background for my book, Birds of Passage, an Italian Immigrant Coming of Age Story. So that book is not autobiographical or biographical, but it's a historical fiction set around 1905, and I hope it reflects the fact that I grew up with a lot of people who were immigrants from Italy, and tries to capture how they thought and acted.
Yeah, and I can relate to what you're saying, because we lived in England actually for 26 months, and you get a whole different perspective on things. And it's, it's one thing to visit someplace, but it's a whole nother thing to live there and learn the culture and
absolutely. You know,
understand how they think and everything like that. To your point, the book is great, and I marvel at it. I think you're probably the third or fourth person that I've interviewed that has written, historical fiction type of books. And I find it fascinating that you could, take history and then put it into almost a personal perspective, and, talk about, coming over on the boat and grasp the feelings of the people without actually knowing the people or hearing their stories.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
Well, again, I'm not saying that people told me the specific stories in the book, but I certainly... again, my grandparents, uncles, other people that we knew, the whole Italian experience, I was immersed in it as a young person, and that I think, plus the research, I could relate to that, make sure that my facts are straight, and that's how it came out.
I'd love to do something about my family. I'm working on more of a autobiography / how I researched my family's right now. And I'm not a writer, but I've gotten some help from some pretty good people. So hopefully it'll turn out okay.
Great. Good for you.
And, I did love the Halloween short story because
you.
As I was reading it, I was living it because I lived it,
exactly.
from the, using mom's makeup to be a clown or a bum. I don't know if you're allowed to say bum these days, but anyway. the sock with chalk in it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We're, anybody young listening to this probably going, the sock with the chalk in it. What is he talking about? I remember you would put the sock in the chalk and pound it on the sidewalk until it got all dusty, and then just go around and bash your friends with it.
Exactly.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't know if that was a New York thing, where we did that, or if that was something that people did in other parts of the country. Certainly Halloween was one of those events growing up that you kind of look forward to,
Absolutely. As I said in the story, pennies and sometimes even a nickel or a dime.
Yes. Well, when you got the dimes, that was,
Yeah, that was actually money. Today, I was thinking the other day, who walks around with change in their pocket? I mean, nobody has loose change in their pocket. It's irrelevant.
I don't even have cash in my pocket half the time, more than half the time. Maybe if I'm going someplace local to pick up a six pack or something like that, I'll go to the bakery. I'll have some cash. But 9 times out of 10, I go in the drawer and I'm like, oh, there's only $5 in there. You know, you have to run to the bank. Luckily, they're pretty close. Where did you go? Where'd you go to grammar school and high school? I guess in Ozone Park. Yeah.
PS 63, and then we lived. I mentioned about Ozone Park. I lived on 102nd Street, which was literally a half a block from John Adams High School. But again, my father interceded, and he said, "Well, you know, I'm not sure that's, you know, you're going to go to Catholic high school." So I had to take tests and to qualify, and I was accepted at Holy Cross High School. So instead of walking half a block to high school, I took three buses every morning and three buses back to Holy Cross High School in Flushing.
I was going to say that's a hike from Ozone Park. My brother went there. My brother graduated in, I think, 63
yeah, or 64. I think I was in the mid 60s. I think it was 66, but I'd have to do some calculation to be sure.
My cousin actually was in the first graduating class, which I think was 59. But yeah, that's a long haul from Ozone Park.
It was.
And I went to Monte Cristo. I went to Catholic elementary school, but I went to Monte Cristo in Astoria or Long Island City, which for me was quite a hike. It was a bus and two trains.
Yeah.
And then a walk.
Yeah.
And then when I finally got my license, it was 20 minutes on the Grand Central.
Yeah.
From College Point to there was boom.
Exactly.
Right through. Now, were you guys allowed to, because I know some schools back then, were you guys allowed to drive to school once you got your licenses or?
Well, actually, I didn't get my license again. New York, I took trains, buses, the car's expensive. So I didn't get my license until I think I was 20 or 21. And I never drove to high school. It was always those three buses each way.
I couldn't wait to get my license. I got my license at 17. So now you've written.
Well, you were on Long Island, so you had driver's ed.
I was in College Point, but my school, our school had, we had driver's ed in Monte Cristo. So, I guess I was 16. You were allowed to take driver's ed at 16. But College Point, you know, there was no train in College Point. It was just buses to get into Flushing and things like that. And
right.
You know, I just couldn't wait to get my license.
I understand.
So when you went to school, when you went to college, when you graduated college and everything, you didn't go back to Ozone Park. Did you go out on your own? And
so from Ozone Park, you took the A train to City College.
That's right. Yep.
And eventually, yes, I did finally get a car and drive for my graduate years. And then from there, I went to Ithaca, New York for Cornell for a couple of years for that MBA. And then it was kind of funny. When I got out of graduating from Cornell, I went for interviews and I went to work for at Arthur Anderson in Manhattan. And it was a good interview and, you know, it looked positive. And I decided to visit my parents, who then by then lived on Long Island. So I took the train out to Long Island, and it brought back all those commute memories. And I refused the job offer before I got off that train. Turned out to be lucky for what happened to Arthur Anderson. But so then we went to work. I got married, and my wife and I, we went to Pennsylvania, where I went to work. And then ultimately, I mentioned joining 3M in Minnesota, and then having those overseas experiences. So we never went, you know, and the time, as I'm sure you've had exactly the same experience, because I have, of course, gone back and gone down the old neighborhood street, and the house looks a lot smaller than I remembered.
Isn't that funny? Isn't that, you're exactly right. My My parents' house in College Point was 15, I think about 1,500 square feet. It was built in 1954. They paid $15,500 for it.
Right.
My mom sold it for over 600 about, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago. Right? Imagine. Isn't that nuts? And the people were glad to have it for that price. College Point, I don't know if you know College Point at all, but College Point was a small town within New York City in the 50s and 60s. Nobody went there for anything because there was nothing really there. You know, in the early 1900s, there were a lot of factories and things like that, you know. But, you know, the house behind me, my grandmother's house, there were three bedrooms upstairs and a bathroom. And the downstairs was really just like a small living room and a small kitchen and a bathroom. I marvel at what my aunts would produce out of this tiny little kitchen every holiday.
Exactly.
It's just amazing. They had, you know, four burners, you know, your typical 50s, 60s refrigerator. And the food that would come out of there was just incredible.
Did they make ravioli?
Yes, exactly.
Did they dry them on white towels on a table? So my mother would make them. So she cut them out. I'm sure the same with yours, with a water glass, right? She make it roll out the dough, put a little dollop of the ricotta mix, and then use a water glass to cut them out. And then it was my job to take them away and put them individually on a white towel on another table, so they would dry a bit before cooking.
So I'll tell you a funny story. First, my uncle used to make the ravioli because he worked in the bakery, and he, you know, he had the big wooden board and the long dowel, you know, to roll out the dough. And I would sit there and watch him roll out the dough just to the right size, you know, the right thickness and everything like that. And the water glass. However, the difference was because, like I said, there wasn't a lot of room in the house. He would put the ravioli to dry on the sofa, put the sheets out on the sofa, put the ravioli. I was probably about 10 or 11. My cousin Frank was 16 or so. And he sat in the ravioli. And
that is funny.
He went, what's wrong with these people? Who puts food on the... So anyway, about 10 years ago, I wrote a song, Don't Sit on the Ravioli.
Yeah, no, that's great. What a great story.
I would marvel about my uncle. So did you have non-Italian friends come to the house?
Sure, we had. I mean, we were in a mixed neighborhood. As I put in my stories and places I remember, my best friend was a Jewish kid, a different Jewish kid than in the stories. But you had people come over and it was a whole different experience for them.
Exactly. That's what I was going to ask you. You had to warn them about how much to eat.
Italian, you know, food is love for Italians. And the worst sin is not having enough. So you don't always have more than enough.
That's right. Now I remember my mother would make like an extra chicken just in case somebody was still hungry.
Yeah, be sure.
I used to love when I bring one of my Irish friends or something like that to my grandmother's house, or my first wife, she was Irish and German, and you know, they would see the food and just like, what is all of this?
Right.
We're just getting started.
Right. And they could have just had the one course. That would have been enough.
Right. And we used to go to the beach and we'd have eggplant parmesan and sausage and peppers, and all the American kids were eating peanut butter and jelly and bologna sandwiches.
On Wonder Bread.
On Wonder Bread. That's right. That's right. Not that Wonder Bread was bad, but it was...
No, not at all. But it wasn't Italian bread.
It wasn't Italian bread. That's for sure. But yeah, it was always fun. And I'll tell you another. I should do what you do. I should really write some. I've written
You
some down,
should. You should.
but
You make
the
some great stories. The saving ravioli is wonderful.
It's one story that my mom told me about my uncle Nick, my oldest aunt's husband. He was probably one of the funniest men that I ever knew. He was just, joking all the time. And my uncle was bringing his girlfriend at the time over, and I guess this must have been the early 40s, probably. He told my uncle Nick, "Please, don't embarrass me. Don't do anything to embarrass me." And he said, "No, of course not, of course not." So somebody asked, "Can you, Nick, can you pass the chicken?" And he picked up the chicken and threw it across the room. And he, in probably around 1950 or so, he smuggled in my cousin from Canada. My oldest uncle, he didn't come. My grandparents left him behind, and he didn't come until the 1950s. It was his family. And my aunt and uncle went to visit in Canada, and my cousin Mary was very upset about being there. She was in a boarding house where it was all men. My uncle was there, of course, but she wasn't happy. And my uncle said, "Oh, come with us." And they rigged up the back seat of the car so she couldn't be seen. And he drove her across the bridge into America.
There's another great story. Yeah, you definitely have to write these.
Yeah, I've done a few. I've written a few. But you talk about I'm sure every family or every nationality has similar kinds of stories, and but I think we Italians like to think that we own all the crazy people because we're Italian.
Well, that could be true.
But we were talking earlier. You mentioned about no internet, and we made our fun.
Exactly.
The family was everything. Nothing came before family. It was just a great time to grow up.
Yeah, I mean, it's just as you say, you can look back, and I'm sure some people would look back at what we didn't have, but we didn't know what I was never aware of what I didn't have. I felt fine. I was in a warm environment, warm, loving environment, and everything was fine.
Yeah, it was great fun. It was great fun. So, where can people find your website and buy your books?
So, joe-giordano.com is my website. So, joe-giordano. And Amazon, Barnes and Noble will all have the books. If you go to my website, there'll be links. You can also read the first chapters of the books there. So if get a sample, see what you think, and then there'll be some sort of hot button to get you to Amazon or Barnes and Noble to buy it.
Oh, great. Yeah, and I'll put all that information out there on the blog. Well, thanks again, Joe. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Bob, this is great fun. Thank you. It's great to hear your stories.
Same here.